This is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu. Embassy Suites by Hilton Charleston, an all-suite hotel and conference center minutes from Yeager Airport and Capital Market. Reservations and brasserie dining information available at hilton.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.
Welcome to the Legislature Today. I'm Curtis Tate. This is the first episode of our show for the 2025 regular legislative session. Just a reminder, the legislative session begins a month later when a new governor is sworn in. It will run until April 12th this year. Yesterday, both chambers returned to the active consideration of new legislation. Already, more than 800 bills have been introduced between the two chambers. There are sure to be duplicates, however, and the leadership has indicated they plan to have a more deliberative process when considering the bills. Patrick Morrissey delivered his first State of the State to the West Virginia Legislature Wednesday night. He went over his plans for the state, much of which he will need the support of the legislature to accomplish. Brianna Heaney has more.
Patrick Morrissey said his governorship's hallmark will be fiscal responsibility, something he says is needed because he says he was left with a bad financial situation.
We inherited a deep structural deficit. It was papered over with one-time money that's now running out.
That one-time money he's talking about was COVID-era federal funding, extra money the state received in the federal government's response to the COVID pandemic, and all the economic fallout that came with it. And it was a lot of money, in the billions. The governor also emphasized the future of energy production in the state.
I know our state and our nation are on our way to a resurgence and a golden era unlike anything we've seen before. We will once again be the engine that powers our country. That means using even more coal and gas, utilizing our rich water resources, and developing nuclear-powered small modular reactors. It also means expanding the use of microgrids.
And all this energy is needed, Morrissey says, to power the future of artificial intelligence. AI needs a lot of power and water to function, something Morrissey says the state has in abundance, and that could be used for this new technology. Much of Morrissey's agenda for the state was presented as big picture ideas. Some of the more specific and detailed plans he has are to get rid of certificates of need, which are currently required for the creation of new healthcare facilities.
You know, it's essentially a permission slip. It's given out by the government that you need to open up a new hospital or a healthcare facility. It hands over power to unelected bureaucrats and major healthcare providers who decide which communities need new or expanded healthcare services. This is big government activism at its worst.
Another specific goal Morrissey laid out in his speech was to get rid of cell phones in classrooms, which got a standing ovation, even from the Democrats, whose hands for the most part of the night stayed still. The governor allocated about a third of his speech to addressing culture war issues, like defining gender, DEI, immigration, and what he calls wokeness in schools. Some noticeable things that were left out were vaccine exemptions and childcare. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney.
Later in the show, we'll have the minority response to Governor Patrick Morrissey's State of the State address last night. A new set of rules in the House of Delegates was approved yesterday, with Democrats and advocacy groups both raising concerns. Delegates offered 9 amendments to the rules, but none of them passed. Brianna Heaney brings us this story.
The legislative session has started, and as constitutionally required, lawmakers approved rules for each chamber. However, some of those rules sparked vigorous debate in the House of Delegates. Delegate Kayla Young, a Democrat from Kanawha County, asked that House committee meeting videos be available instead of the current audio-only option.
So if you're deaf or hard of hearing, you're not going to be able to listen to those audios.
The Senate makes both video and audio of committee meetings available.
I don't know why we don't hold ourselves to the same standards of accountability and transparency.
That amendment was denied. But the main complaint of Democrats and advocacy groups was a rule that does away with public hearings. Public hearings are a chance for members of the public to tell lawmakers what they think about a bill. This has happened in the past for taxation formulas and for bills that would define gender. Earlier this week, environmental and social justice groups met at the Capitol to criticize the rule. John Doyle from West Virginia Free said he thought it was a bad decision and he hoped House leadership would reconsider the bill.
It is truly sad that the West Virginia House of Delegates, which for many years legitimately prided itself on being the people's house, has decided now to shut the people out.
During opening day, Democrats criticized the rule and offered amendments to change it. Delegate Evan Hansen, a Democrat from Monongalia County, introduced an amendment to strike the new rule and preserve public hearings.
This is an issue of great concern to people across the state, people who've lost faith in their elected leaders. And I think this is a show of good faith to our constituents that we care about this.
Hansen's amendment was rejected. Delegate Matthew Rohrbach, a Republican from Cabell County, says that members of the public can weigh in during the elongated committee process.
The most important role we have as legislators is to listen to our constituents. That's it. That's the most important rule. We should all live by that. So what we've done, the rules are now under consideration, is we have come up with a plan to allow for each and every bill, to have public comment. So if you can't get here for Martin's bill, guess what? You can send it in written, or if you are called in front of the committee by the chair, you can come up. Now, I'm going to assist.
The caveat, they will have less time to do so and have to be invited to speak. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney at the Capitol.
Child welfare advocates came to the Capitol Wednesday to urge lawmakers to make changes to child protective services. I talked to a few of them.
Last year I found that my son was with an adoption agency, and when I knew that he was at the agency, I knew he needed prayers, but I knew that if he needed prayers, there was countless other children that needed prayers too. So I held the first prayers for foster care last year, and I thought I wanted to hold another one during the first session because we need reforms for the children.
What do you want to see happen in your legislature?
A lot of things. I've been working on this for about 2 years now, I put in a bill to have a bill written last year, and to have every CPS worker in the state of West Virginia with the audio and video camera to record what is going on inside the home.
A body camera?
Sure. I mean, why not? That way they can't lie about what's going on inside the home. It protects the social worker and it protects the family. So, you know, it's a win-win right there.
You don't have a choice. They told me I can't see my granddaughter. She's 18. I said, no way. I fought them. So I do have visitation. But think about it. I have a woman sitting 3 feet from me, 1 hour a week, during visitation, watching every move I make, every word I say. There's no personal, and my granddaughter's a shell of what she used to be. They don't care. So as one of the owners of Watchdog Food Protection Services, it's my goal to fix that.
Senator Mike Wofel and Delegate Sean Hornbuckle, both Democrats from Cabell County who serve as minority leaders in their respective chambers, sat down with Eric Douglas earlier today to discuss what Governor Morrissey said last night in his speech, and talked about being a minority to a supermajority in the legislature.
Welcome to the legislature today. My name is Eric Douglas, joined today by Senator Mike Wolfel and Delegate Sean Hornbuckle, both of Cabell County. And these are the minority leaders in their respective chambers. So gentlemen, I wanted to, or we're here today to talk about the governor's state of the state. It was last night. He actually, right at about an hour speech. He didn't go on too excessively long, but there was a lot in that speech to unpack, so I want to give you guys the opportunity. Kind of the elephant in the room is the governor's projection that was about a $400 million budget deficit. And from that, his budget that he released last night has some budget cuts and that sort of thing. But he also talks about some tax cuts as well in his proposal. So, Delegate Hornbuckle, what do you think about? Do you think? Let's be honest. The legislature controls the purse strings anyway.
Yes.
So, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think it's very checkered, right? It's very checkered in the sense of he is saying that we had surpluses. We just had surpluses. That's what then Governor Justice said under the last federal administration. Now you fast forward under a new federal administration, and Governor Morrissey is saying that we're having a $400 million deficit. So one of those has to be true, and one of those isn't so true. Also, what he's saying in there, he said it repeatedly last night, that he inherited this. And so last time I checked, and while we always, my colleague Mike and I, want to work in a bipartisan manner, the fact remains that we have not ran the ship. We've been the minority. And so I thought it was very interesting enough that Governor Morrissey said that there was fiscal irresponsibility because they're the only ones that have attempted to govern over the past decade. And so I think that should be noted. But I was very, very unpleased to hear about the cuts, right? And so he talked about, I believe, an across-the-board 2% a cut to general revenue, but also talked about reducing the income tax more. That math just doesn't work. That means we're on a steady trajectory downward, which is not good. And so I think we have to really roll up our sleeves first and figure out, you know, what just is the state of the budget, right? And again, I thought that my chairman, Chairman Vernon Chris, and some of his Republican counterparts and some of us Democrats did a pretty good job with that. But if the governor's saying that's not true, then we're going to have to sharpen our pencil and see where everything is at.
There's going to be a lot in those budget hearings coming up very soon, right?
A lot.
Senator Wolfel, you want to comment on that from your chamber?
Well, I haven't looked at the budget numbers. I do know that when the governor, and by the way, the governor is very articulate. He's a smart, well-educated guy. I think he's going to work hard. I think we're going to see him every day as opposed to what, you know, we had to deal with the last few years with his predecessor. You know, it just seems to me that he talked about cultural issues quite a bit. And last session, it seemed to me like we wasted a lot of time with cultural issues. Now, let me say this, the governor was very candid. He pointed out that West Virginia is number one in overdoses, dead last in educational achievement, dead last in workforce participation, dead last in, or close to last, in everything that really matters, the metrics that matter. So I appreciated that candor. We didn't have that with Governor Justice. Everything was superficially great. So I'm going to take a wait and see attitude. I haven't been on the budget committee previously. I'm new to that committee, so I just don't have an opinion on the status of the funds that are expected in come July 1st. Now, I will say that Marshall has expressed their concern for budget cuts that are proposed for them. If anybody's interested in public education, and I know a lot of your viewers are, we're going to move somewhere around $200 million next year into private schools, in-state and out-of-state, and that's got to undermine public education. So if you're a teacher, a school service personnel, you have kids in public schools, or you just, in fact, support public education, pay attention, because there's a lot of money that's being shifted out of the public school system. And there's a lot of political will for that to happen right here.
You're talking about the HOPE Scholarship, which
correct,
is money following students. The estimation is right now about $100 million for the 26 fiscal year. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes. And then that will balloon to, I believe we heard today through testimony, to about $382 million by 2027.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I believe the department already did a study that if the trajectory continues as is, that there could potentially be 12 schools that would close in our state. And so that means less opportunity for our kids. That also means less jobs. Sometimes we don't connect the dots on those things. And while I'm very appreciative of you know, Governor Morrissey talking about, you know, Votech, right?
Sure.
Those are good things. He talked about advanced manufacturing, which the Senator and we have, I would think, the hub of that down at Marshall University in Huntington. Those are a couple good things. But that's where we feel it was limited, right? He did not talk about people issues. He did not talk about what everybody in the great state of West Virginia talk about at night over the dinner table, all right? Or the TV dinner tables, right? If you grew up like me with not much, right? And so the thing that I did not hear, and I was very discouraged, we didn't talk about utility rates. I don't care what nook or cranny you come from in the state, everybody is experiencing higher light bills, all right? Whether it's electricity, whether it's gas, whether it's water. This might be the number one thing that we have to tackle, and I was, you know, not pleased that we did not hear about that. We also didn't hear about, excuse me, what were you going to say?
No, I was just, finish your thought, but that's...
Now, we also didn't hear about child care, foster care. These are things that we've been beating the drum on, and again, these are real people issues. The Senator said it earlier, the whole campaign rhetoric, talking points, buzzwords on things that, quite frankly, aren't true, that's over. It's time to govern right now. And we need to talk about real kitchen table issues that are affecting West Virginians, not talking points that get people elected.
I want to come back around to the foster care and those issues. But one thing the governor spoke at length about last night was coal and making energy a centerpiece of his administration. I believe it was in the one of the interim meetings on Tuesday. I don't know if you gentlemen were in it, where some experts from the energy companies themselves said they had no intention of devoting any more money towards building coal-fired generation plants. So it seems a little out of step. Now they're big on natural gas, so
yes,
so that's fine. But even the AEP itself was saying, no, we're not building another coal-fired generation plant. So where's that stand?
Well, I tell you that I'm in favor of an all of the above energy policy. Sure. Renewables are certainly a part of that, but our natural gas is where the money is, I think, for us to drive our revenues. Also, coal is on the uptick, and the market will dictate that. The market will dictate the demand for coal and the demand for gas, and the price will dictate what's extracted from the ground. So I'm with him on those issues, because the issues that I'm concerned about, like child poverty being at 20 to 25%, the antidote to that is a good job. So I'm for whatever will
fair
bring
enough
good jobs to West Virginia. What I'm not for is wasting time in our floor sessions, and I see this coming, making it illegal to talk about slavery, okay? And those types of cultural issues, we're in desperate straits, as the governor candidly pointed out. We're dead last in what matters good, and we're first or second in the real negative stuff. So again, don't criticize this. I don't criticize the speech, because in a sense it is a political speech, but it's the governor is governing 1.7 million people, and we do need to address clean water, and we need to address energy bills, and maybe not worry too much about the high income tax cuts to the very high income and the donor class. Let's focus on middle class West Virginians, get them to work, and I think that's popular. I don't think you need to, it's not a Republican primary election. This is governance 101, but I believe the governor's gonna work hard. I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a smart guy, and we can work together and collaborate and make this state move forward.
He said it best. We want to work together. And again, what we're not for is campaign talking points. All right, we want to genuinely roll up our sleeves and work on this. Again, going back to the education, as we know, we have to figure out a way to where those taxpayer dollars from West Virginia is not leaving our state. It's unacceptable when you have teachers that are not making a livable wage. Right. It just simply cannot happen. Again, he talked about the social issues. Now more than ever, we need unity, right? Those things don't move the needle. They don't create a job for anybody. They don't put food on the table. They're not going to stop that rising light bill. And so that's time to put that stuff away, and let's actually start governing and acting like adults.
One of he didn't spend a lot of time on it actually last night, but the governor did speak about PIA, mm-hmm. Which has been a kick the can down the road for a long time in the state. Probably goes back to even when the Democrats were in charge, that it's been a struggle. You know, they always used to say for state employees that you weren't going to get paid a lot, but you got great benefits. One of those benefits was PIA. There's been large raises in healthcare costs in general. But the copays and that sort of thing. So, what do you guys think about how do we address PIA that makes it stable and good for the state employees?
Well, one thing I do think the process that we moved to the House, a more deliberative process, right? I think that will allow for that, for a true discussion to try to get to the root of the problem. But to myself and our caucus, it relies on the prioritization. If we prioritize that at the forefront of our session, we've only got 59 days left now, all right? We cannot waste time on issues that don't move the needle. That probably needs to be in our top five issues that we take care of right now, and we can't. And that's the way we don't kick it down the road and stop worrying about these other issues.
Well, today we're taking up the elimination of the polio vaccines being mandatory. That's been taken up today in the Senate Health Committee. So I gave a floor speech saying, you know, we're going to give polio another chance to make a comeback in West Virginia. That's the number day one priority. I just can't fathom that with all the things that are facing our state, all the issues that matter, we're doing that first. So PEIA should be, as the delegate says, let's hit PEIA, let's study it, let's make it equitable, and let's make it fair to the people who are retirees and people who are working for the state at less money than they could make in the private sector. I don't mean give it away, but let's be equitable in it. And again, let's do what work together. We're willing to do that, and we always do that.
I just appreciate my senator. He talked about the vaccine bill running today. That's the one area where we're number one in the country, leading in childhood immunizations. When we had, I believe it was last year, a breakout in our beautiful country of the measles, guess who was protected? West Virginia. And there were cases on all the neighboring states touching us because we have made a concerted effort to protect our children. And so why we would come out of the gate and trying to harm our children, it's just a waste of time. And again, we need to be able to govern better.
Gentlemen, we've got about 2 minutes left, so I'm gonna give you about a minute each to do a kind of a closing statement if you want. Anything that you want to address for the upcoming session?
I'll be glad to say that I'm optimistic that we're gonna work hard. We collaborate with everyone. The people out in the communities want us to work together.
Yes.
They are tired of division and issues that create division. I mean, we have, as I've said, very severe problems in this state. We're in the worst shape of any state in the country on many metrics. The governor said that last night. Let's work together. That's why we're sent here. We're not sent here to clown around.
Fair enough.
So again, protecting public education. That is huge. That should be number one for us. Number two, we really want to make sure we get a handle on rising utility costs. We absolutely have to. Number three, childcare and foster care. We've talked about it time and time again, and we want to do it in such a way that we're helping parents, providers, and small business. We have to absolutely make sure that we are doing that. And so if we can do all those things and work together in an adult-like fashion, we believe that we can take care of things in this great state.
I remember actually at an interim meeting, watching an interim meeting, former Senator Mitch Carmichael talking about, that was one of his things, that he told an economic development group that child care was the number one thing we needed to get people back to work and, yes. and actually address that the workforce participation rate. So,
and there's one more thing, and this is very dear to my colleague and I. Last night, I also heard this in the State of the State. With the money that we have in a rainy day fund, he talked about some of that's supposed to be for emergencies, not just in Huntington, but across the state. Over the past several years, we've seen a lot of natural disasters. I want to make sure that we are giving money back to the people of West Virginia to help them rebuild their communities and to work with municipalities and counties to rebuild the infrastructure.
Thanks, sir. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
I hope you'll be back for the show again later.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
That was Delegate Sean Hornbuckle and Senator Mike Wolfel speaking with Eric Douglas about the upcoming legislative session. That's it for tonight. Thank you for joining us. The Senate will gavel in tomorrow at 10 a.m., followed by the House of Delegates at 11. Catch the legislature today, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. And remember, West Virginia Public Broadcasting covers the session daily in our radio news program, West Virginia Morning, and on our news site at wvpublic.org. We also broadcast the daily floor sessions of both the House and the Senate on the West Virginia Channel. I'm Curtis Tate. Good evening, and see you here again tomorrow.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu. Embassy Suites by Hilton Charleston, an all-suite hotel and conference center minutes from Yeager Airport and Capital Market. Reservations and brasserie dining information available at hilton.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.